reserve those chambers for 2 minutes for rebuttal if you can. May it please the court, my name is Brittany Lewin. I'm here today on behalf of Elena Robles, appellant in this case. Elena appeals the decision of the separate juvenile court adjudicating her disturbing the peace of Faith Maha Jewel. Our argument is essentially that the petition was filed against Elena because she caused Mr. Mahaju, the campus supervisor or security guard, to do his job when it got engaged in a mutual fight, and that the evidence presented at trial did not meet the state's burden of proving beyond a reasonable doubt that their named burden or victim, Mr. Mahaju's peace, was disturbed.
Did the petition list only Mr.
I had Mahaju is how we told it to trial. Yes, the petition only named him. It did not name the school. It did not name a teacher, principal, other students. It only named just the campus supervisor.
Counsel, would your concerns be an issue of law or an issue of fact or trial?
Primarily in this case, we're arguing that the evidence was not sufficient. There was not evidence presented at trial that his peace was disturbed.
Wouldn't that be an issue of fact?
It would, and given that this is a juvenile case, I recognize that the standard is de novo on the record, and so this court can reach an independent decision of the trier of fact.
But don't we still give deference to the judge, even de novo, as to the factual issues?
Yes, in terms of assessing the credibility of witnesses, their demeanor, things of that nature. But I would still submit to the court that even when we look at the evidence presented, trial court based its decision on inference. When we look at the record, the juvenile court judged that she could infer there was some disturbance of his peace. Inference does not rise to the level of beyond a reasonable doubt, which even in delinquency law violation proceedings in juvenile court is still the standard that the state must meet. Evidence presented was that Mr. Mahaju, who I would note had indicated that he was using his military training when breaking up this fight, training that he'd actually received from the military when he was serving 3 tours of duty in Iraq as a military police officer. He'd been working with Lincoln Public Schools as a campus supervisor for approximately 4 years when this fight occurred. He indicated he loved his job. He talked about how part of his job was breaking up fights. In the 4 years that he'd worked as a campus supervisor, he'd broken up, quote, a lot of fights. Further, he talked about how part of his job is dealing with students who are being disruptive, who need to be removed from class. Some of these students have been physically and verbally aggressive to him himself. And in this case, Elena was not being physically aggressive directly to Mr. Mahaju. This was a fight between two students, and he did his job, as he was employed to do, and put himself in between them and broke this fight up.
So is your argument that a peace officer or someone in Mr. Mahaju's standing couldn't possibly have the peace disturbed?
I'm not arguing that it's impossible for someone in that job to have their peace disturbed, but I think we can look at his training, his experience, what he was there to do. This is a normal part of his day in assessing whether or not his peace was actually disturbed.
The violation was under the Lincoln Municipal Code?
It was.
And what conduct does that address?
The Lincoln Municipal Code was addressing disturbing the peace. There are various ways under the Lincoln Municipal Code. I believe the city cites in their briefs. They weren't a part of the pleadings on their face in this instance. It only said that his peace was disturbed. Fighting is a way that peace can be disturbed under the Lincoln Municipal Code, and yes, the facts are not in dispute that this was a mutual fight between two students. But Mr. Mahan...
Your suggestion then depends on
essentially, yes. I think we have to look at this particular named victim in this particular case.
So if the principal had intervened and broken up the fight, you wouldn't be here?
I don't think we would be. I think we would be here. I can't say my client wouldn't want to appeal, but I would certainly maybe be making a different argument. I think if we had maybe a principal with similar experience.
So the campus security officer did not have 3 years of tours in Iraq.
still be here. They're still employed and have received training from the school to de-escalate students, to break up fights. This is part of their work, and that needs to be taken into consideration.
So your expectation of peace comment, is that what you're saying?
I believe, yeah. I think that's a good
how
way to phrase
that out of the foreign language.
Well, we need to look at the victim. And when we're assessing a victim, we need to look at whether or not that particular individual, if their peace is disturbed.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is what language in the code tells us to take examination of the profile of the victim.
Well, state has the burden to prove each and every element that they have pled. I would submit that a victim is an element of that, and thus it needs to be shown beyond a reasonable doubt that that particular person's peace had not been disturbed.
Counsel, if we accept your premise, would we have to apply the same principle across the board, for example, assault someone who, or a threat, a terrorist threat, you know, someone who has military training and someone threatens to kill them? Under your premise, we would judge that threat based upon the character of the victim.
I think it can be taken into consideration, but I would also note in Elena's case, there was no direct evidence that Mr. Mahaju's peace was disturbed. He did agree when asked on direct by the city about the workday being disrupted, but there was no evidence that his particular peace was disturbed. So I think if that was the instance in that particular case, if the victim never said, my peace was disturbed, I was bothered by this, then I think the same argument could be made, that did not rise to
so this is simply a failure.
I believe it is a failure of proof to meet the burden as it was pled. Perhaps if it had been a different victim that had been pled, had it been Southeast High School where Elena attended, then it may have been a different situation.
If the victim were to testify and indicated that he or she was a combat veteran, but nevertheless this kid really frightened him.
Then we'd be in a different situation, and I would expect that victim to come into court and to testify and say, because of my experience and maybe mental health diagnoses, I was scared and this triggered something. And
so it's a subjective view, and that's your conclusion.
Yes.
So the judge could not infer certain peace, breach of free peace, by the fact that Mr. Mahaju told her to stop several times, stood in between her, she struck the other girl over again.
And they can't.
They cannot make that. The judge cannot make the inference that Mr. Peace was disturbed.
Our position is not because he did not say it. I mean, he was asked about disturbance to the workday. He never testified my peace was disturbed. He talked about at trial how much he loves his job. This is part of his job. This is what he deals with. So in this particular instance, his peace wasn't disturbed.
So would he be allowed to even render his opinion if he was asked? Wouldn't that be determination of the trier of fact and not something that the witness to opine on?
Can you repeat your question? I think I missed the first part of your question.
Would the witness even be allowed to answer the question, was your peace disturbed? Isn't that issue for the trier of fact to decide?
I believe they could answer that question because they're the only ones that can speak to their state of mind.
Yeah, but the trier of fact has to decide if the peace is disturbed, not the witness.
Yes, absolutely, but that would be a consideration whether they indicated their peace was disturbed or not disturbed, and in this instance there was no evidence that his peace was disturbed.
Counsel, you're asking us to recognize a class of people, if you will, who simply can't have their peace disturbed in the normal way. They've got a higher threshold. Peace officers, security officers. Here we're talking about a municipal ordinance. When the city council passed that ordinance, did they create any exceptions? Did they identify any class of persons who are outside the scope of the statute?
No, I'm not aware of any that were outside the scope of that statute, but it still relates, and my argument is you need to look at this individual as the case is pled. This is an element that needs to be met by proof beyond a reasonable doubt, and our position is really not. If inference doesn't rise to proof beyond a reasonable doubt, we're thinking and we're asking that it be that the trier fact does need to consider an individual and their experience and more importantly the testimony presented at trial, and there just wasn't evidence presented at trial that in this particular instance that his peace was disturbed. And so understand that there were some cases that were cited by the city in regards to peace officers' peace being disturbed, and I guess just to kind of wrap up, those are distinguishable from Elena's case. Those address the constitutionality of the statute. A lot of times in a resisting arrest context, that's not what this was here. The two students were fighting. Mr. Mahaji, the named victim, broke the fight. We're asking that this court reverse the juvenile court's decision with directions to dismiss him because there was not sufficient evidence to find beyond a reasonable doubt that this particular victim's peace was disturbed.
Thank you very much. Ms. Ruder, good afternoon to you.
May it please the court, I am Connor Ruder here from the city of Lincoln in the state of Nebraska, brought this prosecution. I heard in the trial courtroom, and I heard here today, that it is not contested that there was a fight. I mean, she said there was a mutual fight. The evidence showed that took place in the school hallway during the school day when class was about to start. There were students and teachers and staff members present. I would submit to the court that answers the question of whether or not that was just a mutual piece of the ordinance. The ordinance told us.
Did you charge, or did you list the wrong victim?
I'm not
charging
sure.
Document?
I don't know that we need to list a victim at all. We did list a victim. What we charged, at least as I had it documented, was knowingly or intentionally disturb the peace and quiet of Steve Mahaji by fighting. When you look at the ordinance itself, it tells us that we have the offense of disturbing the peace shall include, but shall not necessarily be limited to the following, sub one, engaging in fighting. I would submit that no victim needed to be listed. I will tell you that it's a practice in that jurisdiction to list them. I will tell you that listing the other student is not commonly done because that puts us in a conundrum whether or not that person can come testify and whether or not they'll give a version that's very accurately correct.
You have listed the community of the school itself.
Well, I think that we probably could have given that you can list a neighborhood. However, if I believe what was said today, I'm not sure how you vet the subjective feelings of a school. So if I believe what's being proposed today, then no. But in this case, we put on notice the fight in question. We gave the time, the day, the place, and the person, one of the people involved. And he was involved. He wasn't one of the perpetrators of the fight, but he, in terms of giving notice to what you're being charged with, it was that fight at that day on that time that involved Steve Mahaji. Was his peace disturbed? I think unquestionably, and as the court correctly found, no other conclusion could be found from the evidence, and that inference was exactly proper. I think state section tells us that in fact an inference is the same, is as strong as direct evidence. Circumstantial evidence is to be deemed by the court the same as direct evidence, and all natural, reasonable inferences therefrom. When he gets taken to the ground in the course of breaking up this fight that he had tried to get in the way of, and they nonetheless continue despite him saying stop, I think the court necessarily infers that that's disturbing to him. I don't think it matters, and I don't think it's appropriate to look at whether or not he's served in combat, whether or not he...
Are there not cases that essentially say a peace officer's peace cannot be disturbed?
Well, in Nebraska, I think the state specifically rejected that argument. I think in Boss and I believe it's Moore, the court looks at whether or not police officers are people who are less susceptible to being disturbed, and they specifically, on two occasions, specifically reject that.
Found that in the parent's decision, the interest of the victim is very
yes, absolutely.
to whether or not the wrong victim was named, I would submit that's not an element of the crime. I think the element of the crime was there a fight? I think that answers it. I think Broadstone is very instructive on that. In the Broadstone case, the person with the last name of Louisa observes Broadstone yelling profanities near an elementary school where children are present. And he testifies, Louisa testifies as a victim. I wasn't offended by that language. But I was offended because it was occurring, where and when it was occurring. And the court said, that's enough. So that's right. Those were fighting words, slightly different. But that was enough. The fact that he heard it, he testified to it, and there were others there, that was a disturbance. Even though he himself actually said he wasn't offended. I don't think Mr. Mahajan says, I wasn't disturbed. I think he says, this was disruptive. He testified to the effects on him, that he went to the ground, that he had to work hard with another adult to get these students to break up the fight, that he's there to maintain order, and that this was a breach of that order in the school. Again, Broadstone tells us, a breach of the peace includes all violations of public peace, order, and decorum, or acts tending toward the disturbance thereof.
So the fight is divided in your view.
By definition, under our ordinance, discerning the peace shall include fighting. It might include some other things, but it shall include fighting. And I think that there's, and I didn't hear it argued much today, but this idea that somehow Mr. Mahajan is not a normal citizen, that he's tantamount to a law enforcement officer, I truly think that goes nowhere. A law enforcement officer is defined in Lincoln. And again, even if he were a law enforcement officer, our cases have said words alone can disturb the peace required of an ordinance. State v. Groves is an interesting case. In State v. Groves, the officer that they're talking about having their peace disturbed was actually an off-duty law enforcement officer working at the time in capacity as a security guard. Because they were in full uniform and they didn't really answer that in depth, but they were qualified within that as a law enforcement officer. But in reality, they were a security guard at the time that they were disturbed. So I think those cases combine to say clearly, under these facts, Mr. Mahajan's peace was properly found within the disturbance. That was a disturbance of the fighting in and of itself, regardless of what his testimony, whether he used those magic words that were in the ordinance in the disturbance. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, so that actually concludes our arguments for this afternoon, and